Session number 16059, John Court, Reel 8.
Reel 8. So what happened after you got your spare tank? This was in the middle of the Battle of Alamein.
Yes.
You advanced.
Yes.
Your first tank had been blown up.
Yes.
Gone back.
That's right.
The cruise, and then you got a replacement.
A replacement. I can't, to be honest, I can't remember a great deal more about... as I said, I can only remember continually driving. The next thing I can actually remember is being out on Mesmer True. That was on Mesmer Airfield, that's right. Because it was absolutely pouring with rain, it was bucketing down, everybody was getting really miserable. We were being systematically shelled. You know, they would bracket us, and then you'd move, and then you'd wait a while, and then they'd bracket us again, you'd move. It was constant all day like that. But then, that was the time when they came up beside the tank with Dingo and called my name out and asked me to return to Echelon. So I had to return to Echelon, and that's when the case came up to appear at Alexandria for the court-martial for the killing of Harry Mould. I was in Alexandria for about a fortnight, I suppose, 3 weeks.
How did the case go?
Well, they found him guilty, but he couldn't, he could give no explanation at all as to why he pulled the trigger, why he said he'd found the revolver when on the German tank, when in actual fact it was a British service revolver. They checked the pulling pressure to fire the revolver, and it wasn't a hair trigger. It was quite a lot of pressure required to pull the trigger. But he could give no explanation as to why he'd pulled the trigger. So it was one of those things. But anyway, he was sentenced. But
what was he charged with?
Manslaughter, I suppose. If I can remember rightly. But as I say, I think it went for him, the fact that they opted, he could either go straight into detention or opt to go into the Battle of Alamein, which he chose to do. And there again, you see, obviously, we must have known about that Battle of Alamein for him to opt to go to it. So, you know, taking the choice. But
what can you remember what you said in evidence?
Well, no, I couldn't. You know, the fact was that I was standing next to Harry Mould, and that he'd fired the, as he came towards us, he had said, you know, see, look what I've found on the German tank. Have you been down there to, you know, sort of search for any loot? And I don't think he was a very popular chap because nobody really took to him. But anyway, as I say, he then pulled the trigger, which the bullet passed under my elbow, nicking me and hitting poor Harry.
The Qatar Depression, wasn't it, you were saying?
That's right, in the Qatar Depression, that's right, yes.
Do you remember what sentence he got?
Well, no, I believe, if I remember rightly, he rejoined us when we were up in Tunisia. So it couldn't have been all that long. I don't know. But after the case was over, there was Captain Gilboy, myself, and SSM Shepherd. And we started on our way back by a 1500-weight truck. We had a 1500-weight truck and driver. And we used the coast road. But it was a rather rather a longish journey. I mean, obviously, by then the armies had broken through. We were sort of rapidly going up the coast road. And we got as far as Derna. And Captain Gilroy's brother was town major. So, of course, we had to stop there while Captain Gilboy visited his brother. And I think we stopped in Derna a couple of days and then carried on. I'm just trying.
Can you remember anything about Derna as a town?
Not a great deal, no. I seem to remember coming down the escarpment off of the Derna airfield being up high and coming down the escarpment down into Derna town.
I think you said you were in Alexandria for a fortnight. Did the court-martial take the whole fortnight?
No. It was rather embarrassing, actually, because we booked in at the Muhammad Ali Hotel in Muhammad Ali Square, and Captain Gilboy said, well, there's no point in us all. The detention centre was about 12, 15 miles outside of Alex. So he said, well, there's no point in us all going into the centre each day. What I'll do is each morning I'll go up, because there was thousands waiting to be sentenced with deserters and what have you. So he said, I'll go on up to the centre, found out what's happening. If the case is coming up, then I will come back, let you know, and present you. But anyway, it started off day in, day out. He'd come back and say, nothing's happening. And I had a habit of going out and having breakfast out in the town. And this particular day, I suppose it must have been, 10 days, I should think, 8 or 10 days. I'm sitting in this little cafeteria place, having the usual Egyptian eggs, you know, which are like little bantam's eggs, nothing of them. And I'm eating away there, and I look up, and I saw this soldier walking past, and I thought, it can't be. So I down the knife and fork, dashed outside, and it was a fellow called Les Pullen, who lived about 100 yards away from me at Leatherhead. And I said, well, a small world. So he said, well, fancy seeing you out here. He said, I knew from your mother that you were out here, but he said, fancy seeing you. And I explained why I was in Alex, and he was down on leave. So he said, well, I said, well, we must celebrate this, you see. So, of course, we start to celebrate. We go out in the town and have a jolly good time. Anyway, arrived back at the hotel about 5 o'clock, and to find Gilboy and Shep both sort of said, where the hell have you been? The court case came up today. I said, oh no. So Gilboy said, they even had MPs going around in jeeps trying to find me. So he said, my God, he said, well, I'm sorry to say it, Court, he said, but it looks very much as though you'll be in there joining with him. So I thought, God, you know. So anyway, he said, but they put it off, he said, till tomorrow. So anyway, we all went to the centre, and they left me this large marquee. And I can remember this officer coming in with red tabs, and he said, are you Court, the missing witness? And I thought, God, here it comes, you know. I'm for the high jump. So I said, yes, sir. So he said, well, he said, I want you to clarify one or two things. Where was the accused when he approached you, and how far was he from you, and all through the usual rigmarole. And I found out he was prosecuting counsel, wasn't he?
Just rehearsing the evidence.
Rehearsing evidence. And anyway, it went off all right, and no charges were brought, so I suppose they had enough on their plate to worry about me not being there. But I was a bit worried for a while, I must admit.
What was there to do in Alexandria if you were free to
Well, just looking around. There was quite a lot of life going on. I mean, when I say life, you know, I mean, the fact that we've been out there, I mean, I hadn't had a chance to, I mean, I'd arrived at Port Tewfik and we'd been shunted up into the desert. Well, to go back into Alex was fantastic. It was a town, there was lights, and it was a town, you know, with the bars, the brothels, the lot, you know, so, okay, you had your choice. There was Shafto's, the cinema, out just on the outskirts of the town. There was quite a bit to do. As I say, there was the open-air cinemas, or even you could just pick up a gharry and have a drive around the harbour, you know. That, again, was quite pleasant, just a bit. You know, the fact that you were back in civilization, you know, with no and the and in a hotel, of course, with all the beds and sheets and everything. It was quite good. But yes, then we carried on right the way through. I'm just trying to think of when we rejoined the third.
Yes, you went through Derny, you said, and stopped a couple of days there.
That's right, then we pushed on from there.
Were you in your own vehicle? Or were you?
Yes, we went truck, yes. We had a driver, Shep, myself, and Gilboy. That was the three of us, plus a driver. It's quite interesting. I mean, on the way up, I mean, the amount of we never worried much about buildings because, again, they did have a habit of sticking the odd mine on the door and running the line across. But we left buildings well alone. We did find one or two of our own British vehicles that had been... they used to run the mine, put the mine on the side of the road and run the two wires just off the road, you know, and because there was so much sand... you couldn't see it, and you could easily trip a mine up, and you know it was made a bit of a mess of it. And I went, "Well, any 3-tonner truck, for that matter." But we saw one or two British vehicles that had been caught like that, but we had no mishaps at all. I'm just trying to think of where we rejoined the third. Can't remember.
Can you remember what they were doing when you rejoined them?
They were in Liga at the time. They were out on rest. I know it was funny, a sensation. I was quite glad to be back with them. You know, you're sort of, you've missed your family, sort of thing. Yes.
Have you any rough idea of the number of days it took you to get back to them?
No idea.
You were just driving up.
Just driving, yes. Yeah. That's right, until we got there, yeah.
How did you actually find them?
Well, You had your MPs, you had your at all crossroads, well, not there was many crossroads. I mean, we were just using the coast road and just carried on. And there were divisional signs up, you know, so you just followed your sign, your divisional signs, and you just reached them. It's not like being in, well, say, for Normandy, for instance. I mean, so many roads, you've got your coast road, and off from your main towns, you've got one or two roads running a little way into the desert, but you hadn't got any, what I call, there's no main roads. So you just slog along the main road. And then, your div signs were there for you to follow when you get to a certain point. So you just struck out then into the desert. I don't think there's any worry about or any problem getting back. The hardest problem is it was, of course, picking up food. It's not all. I mean, it's not as though you got DIDs everywhere. You know, you had to sort of scrounge your food as you went along. But
what's a DID?
Well, it's a distribution of food. You know, as I say, most units were only too glad to help. I'm just trying to think of a place. We stopped one place for a day, which we were glad to. They was it Tunny? Would it have been Tunny? A very dark fish. They dished it up for breakfast. They dished it up for dinner. Every meal, it was just Tunny. And it was so salty. My goodness. I can remember stopping there for a while. We were glad to move on from there. But I wish I could remember. I'm just trying to think of going up through Derna. What follows Derna? I can't remember. It's funny. I haven't looked at the map of North Africa for ages, years. We were long before Marath, anyway. Long before Marath.
Was Marath the next thing that you can remember as a distinct...
Yes, I can remember Marath Line. I can remember hanging around for it. It seemed we were stuck at Marath for a long time. They said that they'd breached the Marath Line first of all, and then they said they couldn't get through. We'd been set back. They hadn't been able to get across the Marath Line. And then I can remember us going, I can remember us going round the Marath line. We went right out in the desert, and then they put some covers over us. They made us look like lorries, if I remember rightly. I know we didn't move much during the day. We most of our movement was at night, but when we were, they used a lot of camouflage, and then we came in round behind Marath. I can remember that.
Is that the first occasion on which you can remember a deliberate deception measure?
Yes, I can't remember anything between that time. I can't.
Was your move around the end of the Marath line opposed at all?
No, we didn't have no opposition until we came right the way round. Then we came up against some Mark 3s and Mark 4s.
But that was after you'd gone round?
After we'd gone round, yes. Because I think it was the first time I'd got out, and I'd got into a Mark 3 that had been knocked out, and had looked through the gun sight. And I thought what a good gun sight it was, and the M in the periscope with the magnification. I picked up one of our own tanks on through the gun sight, and I thought it was very good indeed. I thought it was an improvement on our periscope sights, but that's about the first time I can remember.
What did you think of the rest of the German?
Well,
how did it compare with the Sherman?
No, I felt that their tanks were a lot, Mark 3s and Mark 4s. I felt they were a bit Heath Robinish. I mean, they were efficient, obviously, but they didn't have the finish. I mean, they were so much more exposed, or I felt they were more exposed, even the driver's compartment, to what the... Can I use the word angular? It seemed there were so many bits and pieces that one could knock yourself around with. Whereas with at least with the Shermans, you had some sort of semblance of crew comfort. I think crews of Mark 3s and Mark 4s most probably had a rough time, a hard time. As I say, I think they were quite efficient tank.
So the gun was good, but the crew comfort was bad.
I felt so. Yes. The crew. Yes, it was hard, and I feel that never having been in one when the engine was running, but I can imagine that the way the layout that you would get fumes. Between the engine compartment and crew, I felt that it's hard to put it into words. There wasn't that finesse. It was an efficient war machine, but not with any idea of crew comfort. It was the job was there to get the gun to whatever position it wanted to fire, and that was it. Hard luck on the crew. But I think it was a good. I think it was good, a good tank, especially when they upgraded the gun. I mean, again, it was quite efficient. Put it this way, I'm much more pleased to be fighting in a Sherman than what I would have done in a Mark IV. Put it that way, Of course, the only thing with a Sherman, of course, is its height. That was the only problem with Sherman. So you did feel you stuck up a mile in the air. I would like to have seen a lower profile, but then again, if you hold down, if you could get hold down, I mean, there was a lot of places where you were out in the open desert, which, at a distance of 1,000 yards, I mean, there's no doubt about it, a Sherman did stand up high in the ground. I mean, and it gave a beautiful outline, But tank for tank, I would take the Sherman at that particular time, to the Mark 3 or Mark 4. I always remember a time when we were in the B squadron was spread out in box formation where we were trundling along. I can't remember where this was. And someone said there were six tanks approaching us, and they were M13s. And I had to admire that. Well, I had an idea, you know, that I thought to myself, well, it's the first time I've known Italians really take on, I mean, to have seen the whole squadron coming towards them, you know. But they kept coming, and of course, all six were knocked out. But we found they were crewed by Germans. They weren't, given their due. I mean, what they hoped to achieve, God knows, because they didn't have a hope in hell of hurting us. But yeah, it took some guts to trundle forward with those things.
Did you have any opportunity to look inside Italian tanks?
Yes, as an M13. But
what were they like for crew comfort and so on?
Well, I would only say they're similar to the again. No great emphasis on crew comfort. You know, it's just a steel shell around a series of levers and that to get them from A to B. I don't think there was any tank. That particular time, excluding, I mean, I'm not talking about Valentines and Matildas and things like that, but frontline tanks, there was nothing really that I prefer to until you came, which were equivalent to, until you came to the Panther, you know, and that was in a world of its own. You know, I feel that when they designed that, I'm not quite sure whether they took a shine from the T-34, whether the T-34 took a shine from the Panther, but whichever way it was round, both tanks were very, very good and marvellous pieces of machinery.
What about the gun in the Italian tank in the M-13?
Oh, that was a little... God, what was that now? Gosh, that was I think it was a 37mm. Had a vicious little crack to it. Well, much the same as the gun on the Sherman. I mean that 35mm in the Sherman, not the Sherman, on the Grant and Lee. I mean that was fantastic. I mean that the trajectory of that. I don't know what muzzle velocity of that was, but when you fired that, it was a terrific whip crack. It really was, and it really went. It was a great little gun that, but. No, I mean, the M13, even if it came really close, 500 yards, I mean, it couldn't hurt you, really. I mean, it'd make a groove up the front, but, I mean, you knew that there was no way it could penetrate. Not, you know, there was... No, you're sitting pretty with that.
What about the sights? Were they any good? Do you remember having looked through a...
I can't remember. No, I can't remember ever seeing going through the sights of an M13. No, I can't remember that at all.
Remember any details about the encounter you had with the Germans when you came round the end of the Merritt line at that time?
Well, no. I'm afraid that, you know, it's just a case of, in my case, like as a driver, you hear the commander just say, you know, enemy tanks, and you quickly, hurriedly search yourself to see if you can see anything, and you just see two or three black blobs ahead of you. You see flashes. You hear a clonk or a whistle by. And you know you're being fired at, and then you hear your own guns firing. I'm sorry that I can't really say there's a lot that I can. A driver doesn't have a lot to do in a tank battle apart from move the tank from piece to piece. I mean, he's entirely. Well, I say he doesn't have a lot to do. I mean, if the commander's hit, obviously it's the driver's job to get to the tank into a safe position that you can either look after the commander and look after the rest of the tank, you know. That's your job. I mean, it's you don't just sit there and wait for another one to come. But I say normally you just obey your commander's instructions and place a tank wherever he wants you to put it. That's the basic, and not a lot to do, I'm afraid.
Could you get any idea of range or anything like that when you saw these black blobs and flashes coming?
Yes, you get a rough idea, yes, because once you've... I mean, obviously in my training at Tibworth and also at Bovington, you get to judge distances. You know, you can say, okay, 1,500 yards or 2,000 yards or whatever. Yes, you get a rough idea. I mean, you've got, apart from the fact that the commander's got a higher elevation than you, you're basically the same, you know, view. I mean, okay, you're looking through a periscope, but you get a rough idea. You know, what you couldn't see, well, which obviously the commander can see, is whether the tank you're firing at is being hit or whether it's coming close to you. But you know, that's the sort of thing you have to. But it's a case basically of waiting on your driving instructions, because you know very well that if, especially if he's fired a couple of shells and they're a bit close, the commander's going to call on you to move the tank a bit smartish, either left, right, back or front. So that's your job to move it as quick as he wants you to move it. But nothing much else, I'm afraid. It's a very boring job, a tank driver's job. You haven't got the satisfaction like a gunner. I mean, at least a gunner, he's, you know, he knows whether or not he's put his shell close to the, or whether he's hit. I mean, if he's hit, it's marvellous, you know. It's jubilation throughout the tank, as Stuart would tell you, you know.
But you prefer to be a driver, you were saying.
Yes, I still prefer to be a driver. Yeah, well, I've always liked driving, you see. I don't think of any, apart from commander, of course, I don't think I'd like to have done any other job in a tank except drive. Wireless op, gunner, it never appealed to me. Satisfaction of drive, satisfaction of knowing you could give the crew a good drive, a good ride, and also, you know, give your commander what he wants. That's the basic of it. I like to think I did.
Were there any further actions after this action?
For Marath?
Not Marath, yes.
Oh, yes. Gosh, yes, yes.
Do you remember anything about any of those? In North Africa, before the North African campaign was finished?
Tunis. Just trying to think in Tunis. No, not Tunis. Not Tunis. What am I saying? Tunis. Tripoli? Yes, we bypassed Tripoli. We thought we did a night dash round past Tripoli at night time. We thought we were going in Tripoli, and we'd been waiting outside, and then they decided to make a sudden dash round Tripoli. A throttles to the floorboard sort of thing. One of our dashes. We really hammered round Tripoli, and we finished up. There was a little, took on completely by surprise, that did. And we finished up at a little fort, or big fort, right on the coast, about 18 kilometres the other side of Tripoli. And we took the fort completely by surprise, gave it a bit of a hammering, and the Italians were in there, actually, and they all pulled out. I always remember that, but the simple reason is that we decided to go and have a look in the fort, and went in, and went into one of the big rooms there, and it was absolutely chock-a-block with underclothes. And we thought, marvellous. There were singlets, there were shorts. So we thought, great. So we all trundled these things back to our tanks. And to be able to put a pair of clean white shorts on, a clean white vest. And, God, we hadn't had them on 5 minutes, we were scratching like that, and they were alive, absolutely alive. I've never seen so many fleas. So, of course, we had to wash them all in petrol. But I always remember that because of the fleas. The whole place was alive with fleas. So we didn't stop around there very long. And that was my 21st birthday then, when I was in there. Yeah, I remember that. That was my 20th, the day we entered the hall, that was my 21st birthday. Yeah. Yes. And then I don't really remember much more until we got on the plains of Infeederville. And again, right behind the range of hills at Infeederville, quite the cut across between, along by Infeederville, between Tunis and the flat plain, we were there. There were some heavy guns firing, and it was fantastic because you could hear the gun fire, and you could wait, and then you would hear the shoo, 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 and then it would land. I don't know where their OPs were. The OPs must have been up in the hills because they were Germans and mostly Germans up in the hills, and they would bracket us, and they were big stuff, 105 at least, or 210s possibly, and then you'd move back, and then they'd drop another one near you, and you move forward, and we did this all day long. And then and that was one of the times when we had, I think New Zealanders were with us.